The implications of being a believer. Friends, if commitment to the Christian faith transforms every aspect of how you think, what you value, and how you relate to the world around you, how can you keep it to yourself? Something for us to think about. You see, it's a matter of our need, an implication of our faith, in fact, that this faith which we value needs somehow to be shared. It just cries out that this is not something we keep clutched to our breast, but that this good news, intended for the world, was entrusted to us, and it impacts our lives with the intention that it should touch the lives of others. And so I invite you briefly this morning to think about some of the implications of that. First of all, this whole matter of living the faith openly. You know, our faith is not a separate compartment of our lives that we kind of put over here and put a Sunday label over. It's a faith that permeates all of who we are and all we aspire to be. And it's not hidden. It's out there, visible to be seen in the things we say and do, and in the very character of life which we display. And it goes, of course, much further than simply that our car is parked in front of a church on a Sunday morning. I suppose, you know, to those who may not share the Christian faith, passing a church on a Sunday morning and seeing a gathering of vehicles there may suggest to them that something's happening that they might not know very much about or have much of a part in. But it really doesn't constitute our testimony to the world. But it is important, you see, that somehow we live transparently, and that in our living of the faith, it gets reflected in ways that begin the process of sharing it. And so it's not just that we talk about going to church. It is that this faith we profess works its way into the whole of life. I began this morning with a comment about the weather. Not a rare thing for me to do here in Elberton. But followed it with a question. Have you said thank you? You know, do we take even these ordinary features of life and place them in the context of faith? Do we openly and just visibly identify ourselves with gratitude to God? And doing this doesn't mean that we all have to get bumper stickers. Not a word against people who get bumper stickers, but it's not the primary way in which the faith is shared. Is it not that the faith is shared as God's people live their lives openly, letting the faith that they profess shine through in the ordinary things of life? Because that sets the scene. Because we not only have to somehow find ways If this faith is as valuable to us as we profess, we not only have to find ways to live it openly, but we have to live it comfortably. It's not something added on as an extra. It's not a facade behind which we hide. It's a comfortable part of who we are. We don't have to become preachers. We don't have to get a soapbox and stand on a street corner somewhere. But it is that somehow our relationship with God gets expressed in word and in action in ways that are not misunderstood. Because I suspect that sometimes people just like to say about Christians, if they have something positive to say, well, they're nice people, you know. And of course, it's good that the world might say that. I'd rather have them saying that Christians were nice people than that they, out of their experience, were saying that people were ugly people or bad people. But it's not for our credit that we live the faith. It's to give thanks and glory to God. And if there's any praise to be meted out, it's not to us, but to the God who in grace has invited us into a relationship with himself. And so we work at being comfortable and openly sharing the faith we profess. And so, you know, let it be evident in our conversations about life. Those ordinary conversations which we have day by day with people around us, people of faith and people whose identity with faith we may be completely unaware of. Let it shine through that we're a people who are grateful to God. That we're a people who are anxious to cultivate our relationship with God. You see, we don't wish to ever convey to the world around us, you know, we've arrived, we've got there, we're on God's side, where are you? No, just to reflect openly and comfortably our gratitude to God for his love and care and provision that we have experienced and to which we can testify personally in our lives. And as faith permeates every part of who we are, then surely faith needs to permeate everything about how we relate to the world around us. So, living the faith involves sharing what we believe openly, comfortably, and in a generous spirit. Think about this for a moment. If someone came to you and said that they were hungry and needed something to eat, would you tell them to go away? I don't think so. If someone stopped you and knocked on your door or knocked on your door and said, I'm thirsty, could you give me a drink of water? I don't think we'd chase them away. We'd do it most gladly. We'd do it really almost without thinking about it, or at least without pondering what our response would be. And here we are, you know, as people who by the grace of God are ones who have been introduced to grace, to forgiveness, to healing. And if we encounter people in the world who are struggling with issues and need healing in their lives, if we're encountering people who are weary and overwhelmed by life, how can one of our responses to them not be, you know what I've discovered about life for me? It is that God is there for us. And as I say, this doesn't need to take the form of lecturing people or sitting them down and saying, you know what you need? No, it more naturally takes the form of sharing that this, by the grace of God, is what I have been allowed to experience. Let me tell you about it. Now, let me point you to that passage from Luke this morning. A miracle. Jesus feeds the multitude on the shores of Galilee. Over on the other side of the Sea of Galilee, where the towns weren't so close together and the options weren't right at hand. No McDonald's nearby. People are gathered. It's Passover season, which is not incidental to the story, because it's a season when amongst the community of believers, Jewish believers, there was a certain remembrance of the Lord's hand and work and doings in times past, and that's what was celebrated at Passover, the way that God had intervened years and generations before when the people of Israel were in Egypt, that God had set them free. And now, in this season of the year, when this is being celebrated, Jesus gathers them in. Now, I love the story because, you know, this little boy, when Jesus said, you know, what are we going to do for those folks? The first response was, we can't afford to feed them. And the second response was, there's a kid here who's got a lunch. And you can picture this, you know. All the adults trundled off to follow Jesus without much thought about the next meal, but I picture this little boy, his mother saying to him, don't forget your lunch. You know, take this along with you. And so he's got a lunch, but a lunch that's plainly inadequate to the circumstance. You know, a few little barley loaves and a couple of fish. And Jesus takes that offering of food and he blesses it and it's distributed and everyone shares and everyone is satisfied and everyone is amazed. Now we have to reckon with the fact that it wasn't as though these people were going to starve to death before sundown. I mean, they would have been hungry, I suppose, by the end of the day if none of them had the foresight to bring some food along with them. But they were a hardy type of people. They'd gone to bed hungry on many nights, probably, in the course of their lives. It wasn't as though it was an absolute necessity for them to be fed at that moment, for them to physically survive. No, it was an opportunity for Jesus to demonstrate God's power, God's grace, and God's compassion. You see, it wasn't as if Jesus said, well, yeah, I've got some things to say to you, and I know you're a little hungry, but just bear with me. No, it was a demonstration of God's care and compassion for their ordinary human needs. And it was graciously, freely extended. There was no demand for applause at the end. But the account tells us that, of course, the people who were near enough at hand to see exactly how this had all happened were astounded, because they realized they had seen the power of God at work. It was one more of those things, you see, that set the scene for those very same people as the ministry of Jesus Christ unfolded, for them to pay attention and to listen up and to notice what things followed. And that's the way, of course, it is about sharing faith. It's not as if each act of sharing the faith produces some dramatic, immediate response. It is the cumulative effect of people seeing the hand and power of God that opens their minds to consider what God may have for them. And we're greatly privileged to be given a small part in that happening in the world. And not only are we given that as an option, but actually, you know, that was the groundwork that Jesus laid with his disciples from the very beginning. That they would not only be, by the grace of God, introduced to healing and mercy and peace, but that they would be the means by which that pardon and mercy and peace would be shared in the world. It was part of the whole thing. It was, you see, not forcing anything on anyone, but sharing. And there's a great difference. And so I invite you to consider this. How do we, individually and together as people of faith, make the faith that we profess more accessible, more visible to the world around us, without doing it with the intention of collecting any praise and glory for ourselves, but with the intention that the Lord's name might be praised? And as we think about that and consider it together, may we have boldness to live out what comes to mind. So I leave that with you to think about. We go on next week to the topic of promoting the faith, a little different aspect of sharing it. This is good news, friends. Take it with you when you leave. Thanks be to God.